Hence, An American Haunting, starring Donald Sutherland, Sissy Spacek, and James Darcy. A film based on true events. Voiced by Neville Watchhurst on behalf of MCS Agency. A Lionsgate production. Alan Zeman Productions presents, in association with Midsummer Films, Remstar Productions, SC Media Pro Productions, and After Dark Films, the title, An American Haunting, appears in jagged red lettering. A very fine 18th century detached stone house stands among trees. The air is misty, the ground covered in snow. A car is parked in the drive. Through the snow runs a teenage girl. She appears to be fleeing from something and repeatedly looks back over her shoulder as she stumbles among the trees and saplings. She falls to her knees in the snow. She runs across an expanse of snowy lawn. She reaches the house and struggles with a door handle, all the while looking behind her in terror. Once inside, she bolts the door and looks desperately around the room. As she grabs a brass letter opener and flees up the stairs, the bolt is rattled and the door flies open. The girl runs down a corridor and, her face contorted in fear, shuts herself in a bedroom. Having drawn the bolt, she backs away, staring at the door handle. Whatever is outside is rattling at the door so hard as to cause the door jamb to heave. The girl backs up towards the fireplace. Her eyes dart from left to right as the door handle ceases rattling. She uneasily surveys the room, and then looks back at the door handle. The figure of a small girl, dark hair hanging over her face, appears suddenly at her side. The teenager wakes up in bed.
Jane, it's Mama. Look at me. Jane.
No!
A woman struggles to calm the girl down.
Can I do it later? Please.
All right. But you have to get ready for your father. It's this weekend with you.
The woman picks up clothes from the floor and spots an old doll.
What's this?
I found it in the attic.
You know the attic's off limits.
Sorry.
Just don't do it again, okay?
The girl, left alone now, curls herself in a fetal position on the bright red coverlet of her bed. The woman enters a large downstairs room lined with stacks of books. She lays the doll and a sheaf of papers on top of a broad wooden desk and sits down at it, her face taut with emotion. She reaches for a bottle of Absolute Vodka. She pours herself a large measure into a slim glass and puts it to her lips. She closes her eyes and gasps as the spirits the spot. Her gaze is drawn to a photo on the desk of herself with the girl and a man. She winces. She picks up from the desk the antique doll whose china face is eerily cracked from top to bottom.
I know how you feel.
Cradling the doll in the crook of her arm, she picks up an ancient water-stained envelope. On the front is an inscription in a spidery hand. The woman opens the envelope and unfolds the letter inside.
November 1848. I hoped that no one would ever find cause to open this letter. If you have, I must assume that unexplained or even supernatural events have begun to occur. The story of the Bell Witch has always been considered to be a tall tale. This is not so. Please, read this journal with great care, for its contents may save your life.
Now where are you gonna go? Just one kiss.
No, Joshua. Leave that young lady alone. Did he try to kiss you again?
A caption reads, Red River, Tennessee, 1817. A wooden house stands in a snowy, wooded landscape.
Isn't there something you should be doing, Miss Bell?
Well,
I'm sorry, Mother. I was thinking about something else.
Probably about torturing poor Joshua. You really should be nicer to him, Betsy.
A woman must keep a man on his toes at all times. Isn't that what you taught me?
I taught you no such thing, Betsy Bell.
I'm gonna make Joshua love me forever.
Well, then, you better stop mistreating him.
You think I was too hard on him?
Just a little bit.
What would I do without you?
Oh, you just shrivel up and blow away. Now, don't forget your schoolwork.
I won't.
Betsy looks at herself in the mirror. Guests arrive for a dance.
Indian James Johnson, he grabbed him, swallowed his wing of it, wiped his mouth, and then he took hold of the wheel of the axle, and in an instant, that carriage was up and out of that snowbank as if 10 minutes had a hold of it. Ten.
Speak of the devil. I thought you'd gotten lost.
I'm not so stewed that I can't find the farm next door.
I was telling about you and that carriage last minute.
I did.
Not yet.
That carriage.
Yes, I have. Well, you had to take a horse, man.
Who has the drink?
Now, you're 3 sheets to the wind already.
A group of children hoist a piece of mistletoe above the head of a young man.
Professor
Powell.
They were just
hitting. Huh? Oh, Kenny! Is there not a tradition connected to mistletoe, Professor Powell? Well,
yes, but...
Elizabeth Bell, it's not appropriate for a student to place a teacher in such a compromising situation. You know better than that, Precious.
Well, it is Christmas, Father, and I'm simply attempting to learn the traditions. Who better to learn from than one's teacher?
Us people always seems to have a ready answer for everything, John. Did you settle for a dance, Betsy?
Oh, John, let them have their dance.
Hey, I still just fell for a dance. I promise not to step on your toes.
John, bearded and with long gray hair, walks meditatively to the hearth, knocking back the contents of the glass in his hand. A fire burns in a grate. Betsy's mother lies in bed. Disturbed by the sounds from overhead, she sits up in bed. She realizes she is alone. She wraps herself in a shawl and, picking up a candlestick, goes to the fire to light it. The mother walks through a hallway, cradling her candle from the drafts and looking curiously around. She starts up the stairs. She pauses, listening intently, and then moves on up. On the upstairs landing, she opens a door to see 2 children sleeping peacefully. Her eyes wide and raised to the ceiling, she crosses slowly to the other side of the landing. As she reaches to open another door, a hand grabs her shoulder.
Trying to wear me up before tomorrow's triumph.
Oh, bite your tongue, John Bell.
The door swings slowly open, but nothing visible enters the room. In the bed, fast asleep and clutching a china doll, lies Betsy. Whoever is breathing seems to approach her. A wooden church spire stands bearded with icicles.
The man's a lying pig.
Miss Bats.
He stole my land.
Miss Bats. We have heard your side of the story. Please allow John Bell to finish his.
So, we offered her the use of our slave, Samuel, and the loan of $100 in exchange for our use of that small piece of her land that abuts our own.
At 20% interest.
We shook on it. Spit and shook. I gave you 2 harvests to pay, and you didn't pay for it, so you forfeited the land. It was a fair price for it.
20% interest?
Seemed like a reasonable charge under the circumstances, given her reputation.
The soberly suited gentlemen of the tribunal confer quietly.
John Bell, you broke church law. 20% interest on a church canon is usury. Miss Bat's land will be returned to her.
What about my timber? He took it off my land and sold it.
You would not have allowed the cutting of the wood had you not received that money and the use of the slave.
But he broke church law.
You have the $100 and Samuel's work. The profit on the land is John Bell's. His loss, the loss of his good name, is punishment enough.
John Bell stands forlornly as the court breaks up. His wife comes to his side. The hatchet-faced plaintiff is halfway towards the door, but stops, seemingly struck by a malevolent thought, and goes back to face John.
That's their punishment for you, John Bell. Just wait until you see mine.
Richard, can't touch me, woman.
Treasure your land, health, and happy family while you can, for I swear a dreadful darkness will fall upon you. You and your precious daughter, too.
The woman turns on her heel. John looks at Betsy, who stares back, mute and wide-eyed. The denuded winter trees acquire spring greenery.
Kate Betts. Well, she was feared by everyone in the village. They were all convinced she was a witch. So the Bells took her cursing them very seriously. At the time, I didn't believe in curses, ghosts, or spirits. I do now.
John Bell and 2 companions stalk through a glade, each carrying a flintlock rifle. Spotting a deer, the men fan out. John trots away alone through the trees. Emerging in a clearing, he looks cautiously around. A black shape slips behind a tree. A snarling wolf runs at John. John, puzzled, inspects the clearing. He kneels at the spot where he shot the wolf, but the ground is bare. Seeing the wolf again, he raises his weapon to ward it off.
John.
Father, you all right?
Yeah.
We got it, Father.
The wolf.
Wolf? We shot a deer. Come see it, Father.
The Bell's wooden house at night. Among the surrounding trees, a creature seems to be prowling.
Father!
You heard it.
Back there!
John Bell runs down the stairs of his house. His son, John Jr., awaits him with lamps and rifles. The pair emerge onto the porch and peer out into the darkness. John Jr. follows his father down the steps. They tread cautiously through the undergrowth.
Eyes peeled as black as pitch.
They move slowly on, but John gestures to his son to stay back slightly. As they peer into the blackness, a shape seems to come towards them. Both men raise their rifles. John's wife, woken by the noise, gets out of bed. Betsy, in her nightdress, goes to her bedroom window and opens it. She looks out and sees the prowling animal. The wind whips something against her window frame. Shutting the window again hastily, she runs back to her bed and jumps in, wrapping herself around with the bedclothes. Back in Betsy's room, the girl peeps out, terrified, from her blankets. Her eyes move restlessly around the room, but she can see nothing untoward. The window bursts open. Betsy, now utterly terrified, moves to peer under her bed. For a split second, she seems to see two glowing eyes, but then her mother bursts in.
Betsy, what was that crash?
Mother, there's something in my room! Crash. There's something in my room!
Oh, the wind blew the window open. I'll close.
No! There's something in here. It got inside.
Well, there doesn't seem to be anything in here now,
Betsy. It was probably just mice, darling.
I don't think so, Mother.
Let's go find your brothers.
Come along.
Betsy is led from the room by her mother. John and his son continue stalking the creature. The son raises his gun.
Big scary mouse.
Yeah!
The mother, leading the children down the stairs, stops in shock as a musket ball smashes through the glass of the front door.
Everyone all right?
We're fine. Let's get back to bed.
The two men come inside and begin hanging up their guns and their hats.
You could have killed us.
Yeah, it was young John.
He shot a musket into the house.
Or a discharged accidental.
He shot a musket into the house, John.
We were taken aback. Can't get Kate Batts out of my head.
John, what's done is done. The church has had its say, and that's that. So just put it out of your mind.
Betsy, who has been listening in to her parents from the hallway, now quietly goes back up the stairs and climbs into her bed. She settles down to sleep. There is a spooky sense, however, that she is not alone in the room. Her eyes open. In a classroom, the young teacher underlines the word independence on a blackboard.
Now, class, who were the couriers ordered to ride to Concord to warn that the British were coming? Yes, Thenny.
Paul Revere, Samuel Prescott, and William Dawes.
That's right, Thenny. And did they succeed, Betsy? Betsy? All right, class, let's leave this for a moment. Time for your physical exercise anyway. 15 minutes now, 15 minutes only.
As the rest of the children scamper away, the teacher crosses solicitously to where Betsy has been slumped asleep at her desk.
You all right, Betsy?
I'm tired. Our house makes strange noises at night. It's hard to sleep.
Betsy, her eyes bleary from lack of sleep, ambles out past the teacher. He looks deeply concerned as she goes. Betsy crosses a grassy area surrounded by maize fields. Children play football, skip with ropes, and rock on a seesaw. The teacher looks out from the classroom window, watching Betsy as she crosses to one of a pair of swings hanging from the bough of a large tree.
No, Betsy, quick!
Betsy surveys the playground and all the other children engaged in their various recreations. The swing next to her is empty. Betsy swings gently. Suddenly, on the adjacent swing appears the figure of a little girl in a red dress, her face obscured by a white mob cap. Betsy looks at her as she swings. Back at the schoolhouse window, the teacher looks on. Betsy is alone on the swings. The little girl, whose face appears to be somewhat grey and hazy beneath her cap, extends her left hand towards Betsy. Betsy reaches out and touches the hand, which seems to shrivel like that of a mummy. Betsy falls from the swing.
Betsy!
Betsy, you heard?
Where'd she go?
Who?
The girl who was swinging with me.
Swinging alone, Betsy.
Betsy looks from Joshua to Tenny and then turns, deeply upset, and staggers away. The teacher, having been observing all the while, turns away. Nighttime. John Bell patrols his patch of land with his musket on his shoulder and a storm lantern on a tall, crooked stick. John seems to have just seen to his left the ghostly figure of a woman in a white nightgown, her eyes glowing palely. He looks again, seeing nothing now. He plants his crook in the ground and readies his musket. He walks on and leans in the lee of a tree. Looking up, he sees a figure on the roof of the house. John raises his musket, but the figure has disappeared. Betsy's bedroom door swings open slowly. As the girl lies sleeping, her coverlet mysteriously pulls back off her shoulders. Half waking, she sits up. She looks towards the door. Lying back down, she pulls the cover back over her. Almost immediately, it begins to slide back down the bed. She opens her eyes in terror. It slips down beyond her knees. She stares mutely, then finally reaches for the cover and pulls it back up. Seeing the door swing to again, she casts her eyes around the room. She makes as if to lie down again. The covers are whipped back suddenly. Betsy leaps from the bed and goes to the door, which now, however, slams shut. Terrified, she backs across the room and sits down once again on her bed. She seems to be following the progress of an invisible presence across the room, past the window. A depression appears on the mattress next to her. She lies back down, looking upwards as if the invisible presence is moving around to be on top of her. A lock of her long hair seems to be grasped roughly by an invisible hand. Mother rushes in.
I'm here, darling.
Mama!
Mama! It's me, Betsy! Mama's here!
Betsy!
Her father and her brother John have now both appeared in the room.
He touched me.
Where? Who touched you?
I don't know. I couldn't see.
It was just a bad dream, darling.
But it was so real.
He's all right, John. Had a bad dream.
Let's just get you back to sleep. It was just a dream.
Betsy curls up beneath her covers once again.
It wasn't a dream. There was someone on the roof.
What?
I think maybe Kate Bat sent one of her slaves to torment us. When I find him,
John,
I'll whip him to within an inch of his life.
She finds a lock of hair.
My God.
What?
John, look at this.
That son of a bitch!
John! John! John, wait. John! Stop! We don't know who did this!
I know who did this!
You don't! Listen to me!
Bitch is not gonna hurt my daughter.
Go on, then! Be a fool!
John, striding out among the maize fields, stops in his tracks. He looks back towards his wife, who stands, a forlorn figure in her white nightgown. He turns, walks slowly back to her and takes her in his arms, an expression of deepest concern on his face. The young schoolteacher observes them from between the blinds of the schoolhouse window. He looks perplexed and then turns to blow the candles out. Nighttime. Rain falls in sheets on the roof of the Bell's house.
What are the two foundations of any civilized community?
Church and education.
That's what, and this man pioneered them both for our community with his money and with his hands.
He built the church and the church condemns
him. Usury. I broke church law.
But Father...
Moral turpitude?
He charged a rate of interest that was just a little higher than church canon. But what the elder didn't realize was who he was dealing with.
Shh. The boys are finally asleep.
That's good. Bless them. Now, a few chapters from the Bible will take care of this house's troubles.
Quietly, James.
Hannah prayed and said, "My heart exalts in Yahweh. My mouth is in awe over my unclean spirit that spoke to him." And Jesus answered, "Be silent and come out of him." The spirit gave a loud cry and departed. Please, all join hands. As one, we shall speak this prayer three times. Demon, in the name of Jesus Christ, be silent and leave this house forever. Demon, in the name of Jesus Christ, be silent and leave this house forever. Demon, in the name of Jesus Christ, be silent and leave this house forever. Demon, in the name of Jesus Christ, be silent and leave this house forever.
Lightning illuminates the circle of people around the table. The exorcist, John, his wife, Betsy, and John Jr.
Almost 12 and all is well. I believe your home is safe.
I'm sure Kate Bats is at the root of these disturbances.
Yeah.
As the men play at draughts, Betsy's mother tucks her up in bed and quietly leaves the room.
2 nights ago, I saw something. Man, I think. Moving about the property.
Who was it?
Couldn't make out for sure.
It's probably the professor. He's the only one who lives nearby.
You don't think Richard has his eye on Betsy, do you?
He's her teacher, for goodness sake. Hallelujah, Lucy. God has answered. It's midnight and your house is quiet.
Thank you, James.
I'll beat him, Lucy.
Oh, did you?
Now, I wasn't looking, John. I was talking to your wife. That game don't count.
Don't you blame that on me.
I set up for another one.
I ain't gonna play if you're gonna cheat.
Don't cheat. My move.
Betsy lies asleep. Her door swings violently open. Her bed covers are whipped off her. She looks in terror towards the invisible presence. She runs towards the door but is knocked back.
Oh,
She is dragged by her hair across the floor and up into the air. Her feet dangle as her face is slapped back and forth. She crawls desperately towards the door but is yanked backwards. Lucy, her mother, bangs on the closed door. She is dragged across the floor, her nails scoring the boards. She is suspended in midair by her hands. Lucy, John, John Jr., and the Exorcist burst through the door and stare in disbelief at Betsy hanging there in torment. Betsy falls to the floor. Lucy enfolds her in her arms. The three men in turn recoil as the demon seems to pass close by each of them. A pillow on the bed is suddenly ripped asunder, sending a snowstorm of goose down fluttering through the room. The windows fly open. Lucy holds Betsy tight, staring wide-eyed ahead of her. The drafts board lies scattered on the floor. The exorcist tremblingly raises a glass to his lips. John Jr. sits mutely in a chair. John Bell stands guard at the door to a downstairs room, in which there is a four-poster bed. Betsy lies asleep. Next to her sleep her two young brothers. On the other side of the bed lies Lucy, staring upwards. In her hand she clutches an iron pot hook. The schoolhouse stands isolated, surrounded by fields of maize.
Demon, ghost, entity, call it what you will, it is not natural.
James, listen to yourself. You're not being realistic. There must be a rational explanation.
Listen, Richard. I have documented evidence. It's the testimony of Joan Jordan at the witch trial of all of Bartham, Suffolk, Assizes of 1599. First, scraping on the walls, then knocking, after that, shuffling, and then it clapped the maid on the cheek half a score times.
Do you not think it is far more likely that Kate Batts, unhappy with the ruling, has sent her slaves to exact a pound of flesh from you?
Well, that's what I thought. But this was not the work of slaves.
Lord, no. She was dangling there, 2 feet off the ground.
All right. The incidents always happen at night and always in Betsy's room, correct?
That's right, Professor.
So it was dark. Well, it would have been quite easy for you not to have seen someone holding her.
She was suspended in midair by something not of this earth.
John, now the only logical explanation is that someone was holding her.
There was nobody in that room.
And what about the door? The strength of three of us couldn't budge it.
Well, the rain that night could have caused the door to swell.
Could have.
And the slaps? How do we imagine them?
That's a boy's trick. Dried peas blown through a hollow reed.
A pea shooter? No pea shooter could smack her face that violently.
Did you actually see someone slapping her?
No, I saw her being slapped.
But you did not see someone slapping her?
No, that's the point.
So it stands to reason you may also not have seen someone holding her. Now, whatever happened, it's very clear that confusion was about that room.
Professor, we did not all imagine the same thing. There was something unholy in that room.
John, when the school week is over, I will come and spend a night at your house, and I will prove to you that this is nothing more than someone trying to frighten you.
Daytime. In the classroom, the teacher patrols among the pupils. Betsy lies spark out across the sloping surface of her desk. The teacher looks down at her compassionately. He returns to the front desk.
All right, time's up, class. Leave your slates on my desk, please.
Betsy, hurry up. We gotta get to the river before it gets dark.
Not today, Joshua.
We've been planning this for weeks.
I just don't feel like it.
Come on, Betsy.
I said no! Leave me alone!
Joshua backs off under Betsy's wild stare. He looks towards the teacher, who cannot hold his gaze. Joshua heads off with the rest of the children. Joshua turns in the doorway and gazes back. Betsy returns to her desk and lays her head down once more. The teacher moves slowly down the classroom towards her. He stretches his hand out and gently touches hers. She opens her eyes slowly and lifts her head to gaze up at him.
This will pass, Betsy.
She appears unconvinced, simply laying her head back down. Thin winter sunshine filters through a stand of young trees. Betsy, dressed in a traveling cape, sits leaning against the trunk of a tree. Her face seems to betray inner turmoil as she replays in her mind scenes of her own possession. Betsy, sitting against the tree, drops her head into her hands. The other children run heedlessly by. Betsy lies curled on her bed. Getting up, she moves across to the window and peeps through the lace curtains. She opens the casement and looks out. Joshua stands beneath a tree nearby with Tenny. He is kissing her. Betsy's eyes narrow. She slams the window and runs back to her bed. The pages of a notebook on the bed turn of their own volition. On one page, the single handwritten word, remember.
What?
Betsy hurls the book across the room and, clutching her china doll to her chest, curls back up onto the bed, looking utterly miserable. The Bell's house at night. Something seems to be approaching it through the trees. James and John Jr. are playing draughts. John Bell looks on, smoking a pipe. The invisible presence seems to pass them by and move on up the stairs. On the landing outside Betsy's room, the teacher sits wrapped in a blanket, writing by candlelight. The invisible presence seems to arrive at Betsy's door. Lucy pokes her head around the banister. She and the teacher look on as the door swings open. Lucy climbs the stairs and positions herself in the doorway. As she looks in, Betsy appears to be sleeping peacefully. Lucy peers around the corner. Looking back at the bed, she recoils on seeing the coverlet sliding down over her daughter's sleeping form. Betsy begins to pant and writhe. The teacher appears at Lucy's side. The girl continues wrestling with her invisible foe. Her arms are suddenly pinioned and her legs spread. No. Lucy and the teacher look on in horror as Betsy seems to be being raped by the invisible demon. Her eyes roll upwards.
Don't see what's happening.
John and the others appear in the doorway. John is thrown backwards by the violent slamming of the door.
John!
The door swings slowly open again. Lucy's agonized face peers through to see Betsy sleeping soundly beneath her covers. Lucy tends to John.
Open your eyes, John. He'd be all right in the head come morning, Miss Bell. And the poultice, he keep them roots on his head a while.
Well, Betsy appears to suffer from violent nightmares.
Did you see my sister?
Of course I did.
You think what my daughter just went through was...
Lucy, just bear with me for a minute.
Covers were pulled off her bed. That was no nightmare.
Nightmares may appear to be more than they are. People often imagine that they've seen things...
Imagine any of this. You were there. You saw it. It was not natural.
There's something evil here.
A crucifix rips itself off the wall and flies across the room.
This is blasphemy.
The candles and then the fire in the grate are blown out.
Who's there? Show yourself!
Betsy, is that you?
Destroy them, oh Lord! Let them fall!
Quiet, James.
Destroy them! Destroy them! Cast them out!
Can you see anyone? Who is that?
Or they have rebelled against thee! Cast them out!
Stop that, James!
The invisible presence has been prowling through the room. James's Bible now slides across the room and explodes.
Stop it! Damn you to hell!
A shower of pages of the Gospel finally subsides. They all look on in shock.
Are you familiar with that which Mr. Johnston reads?
Of course it understands the words of the Lord. That's why it's gone.
They all turn as the presence seems to rush out of the room. The teacher runs to the door, looks out, and then turns back.
Was the reading from the Gospel according to Matthew? Was that a yes or a no?
Shh.
The Gospel according to Mark? Is it a Psalm of David? Why are you here? Have the bells disturbed you?
The window implodes in a shower of glass and dust. John Jr. and James duck. John Bell looks on. The black slave woman tending John looks on wide-eyed. Lucy turns an ironic gaze on the teacher.
Are we all having nightmares now, Professor?
A candle burns on a bedside table on which sits a clay pipe. John Bell lies on his side, awake. He appears to be suffering some discomfort in his mouth. He puts a finger to his tongue and wipes it on the coverlet. Seeming to gag slightly, he gets up and sits ponderously on the edge of the bed. He gets up wearily and crosses to the other side of the room. He leans in front of a mirror and sticks his tongue out. Reaching into a drawer, he pulls out a hand mirror. Sitting down in a chair, he raises the mirror to his face. He again inspects his tongue. He drops the mirror and puts his hands to his face on seeing that his tongue seems to be coming up in white welts. He feels his tongue, once again seemingly normal. He then slowly turns to the mirror to be confronted once again with a ghostly figure in white. The figure has turned into the reflection of Lucy, who now moves forward to clear up the shards of broken mirror.
My mess, I'll clean it.
Just an anguished look at Lucy and then away. In daylight, Lucy sweeps dust and broken glass from a chair in the parlor. John Jr. busies himself with timber boards. Two slave women work alongside them.
Thank you. Could you answer the door, please?
Yes, sir.
One of the slaves obeys. A young male slave waits outside.
Hi,
Yankee.
Zach, what you doing here?
Miss Bats told me to bring this bag to the Bells. She says she found it on her land. Bye, Yankee.
Bye, Zach. Who was it, Yankee?
It was Zach, ma'am.
Who works for Kay Bats?
Yes, ma'am. She gave him this bag to give to you.
I don't want anything of hers brought into this house.
She say it belonged to the Bell family.
No, ma'am.
John Jr. grabs the sack, but Lucy takes it from him and empties the contents out onto the table. It appears to be various pieces of linen cloth, one bearing a reddish-brown stain.
This is Betsy's.
Yes, Miss Lucy, and that'd be Mr. Bell's shirt. They's been missing for over a year.
Why would she have their clothes?
The two slave women exchange a covert glance. Lucy notices.
What is it, Chloe? What do you know? Tell me what you know.
You heard about Miss Kate being a witch and all. Well, Miss Lucy, when witches get a critter's blood on folks' clothes, why, that mean the person gone.
Gonna what, Chloe? Gonna what, Chloe?
Gonna die, Miss Lucy. Gonna die.
Burn it!
No, Miss Lucy! That make it worse.
Lucy stares in horror at the maid. The children in the school recreation area are engaged in an energetic game of football. Betsy sits to one side, smiling as she watches. Joshua gives the ball a mighty kick, sending it into the nearby woodland. Betsy moves through a sunlit glade, searching for the ball. In a somber dell, she spots the ball lying on the ground. She reaches out for it. The little girl in the red dress, her face obscured by her mob cap, is suddenly there. She reaches out and picks up the ball, then disappears as she turns. Betsy runs in pursuit. The figure appears again, then disappears.
Stop! Wait! Please stop!
Betsy has been running through the wood in pursuit of the elusive figure, but now, as if time had gone in a strange loop, she finds herself back in the gloomy dell. The ball lies on the ground. She picks it up. As she turns back, she notices a low archway in a wall of rock. She stoops and enters to find herself in a kind of cave. A shaft of sunlight shines down onto a small pool of water. Beside the pool stands the figure of the girl in the mob cap. Betsy drops the ball and moves into the shaft of light. The girl crouches down and gently splashes water towards Betsy. Betsy crouches and joins in the game. Betsy looks on as the girl gets to her feet and slowly walks around the pool towards her. Betsy moves to meet her. The girl suddenly raises her head, revealing a hideous corpse-like face. Betsy awakes in bed next to Tenny. Tenny gets Betsy comfortable and snuggles up to her. Betsy lies, her eyes open, thinking. Tormented images flash across her mind. John Bell grimly inspects the blood-stained shirt. Lucy sits across the room from him, looking grave and worried, wringing her hands. John bunches the shirt tight and throws it into the fire, causing a huge fireball.
John!
John. I gotta kill her!
When I hang you for her murder, what happens to the rest of us?
You won't be anywhere soft than what you already
are. John, I won't have you, John Bell!
But sacrificing my life could end this torment.
He collapses into Lucy's arms. She gently prizes the pistol from his grasp.
We'll find another way, John. We'll find
The girls lie in bed together.
Zeddy? Yes, Betsy? Do you believe in the Lord?
Of course I do.
Don't you?
I used to.
Oh, Betsy.
I'm so afraid.
I'm here with you. Good night, Betsy.
Good night,
Betsy. Did you hear that?
Betsy nods ominously. Both girls hoist themselves up and look towards the foot of the bed. Nothing untoward is visible in the room. But suddenly, both girls are leaping around on the mattress as if under attack. They run to the door. It slams shut. The windows slam shut. The candles at the bedside flare up uncontrollably and melt in seconds. Both girls look around, terrified. They begin to twirl as if possessed. Betsy's eyes are wild. The fire in the grate becomes an inferno. The girls spin wildly. Penny rushes across to the window. Betsy collapses. The fire rages. Penny looks around fearfully. A metal candlestick launches itself across the room, hitting her. She falls. The china doll lies eerily on the bed, its face split by a crack. Betsy lies unconscious. The teacher clicks his fingers close to her face. Tenny lies whimpering in Lucy's lap.
How long has she been this way?
Maybe 30 minutes.
No more than that.
Tenny, can you tell us what happened?
It's all right, Tenny.
She was having a nightmare. She was fighting with someone. She started hitting herself. I woke her up, and then this voice.
Betsy, all right.
Betsy, who has suddenly sat bolt upright and shrieked, is laid back down and soothed by the teacher. She begins to have convulsions and shakes herself to the floor.
Come here, come here. Shh.
The teacher is shocked to see Betsy open completely white eyes. She returns to normal and presses her face to his shoulder. The windows begin opening and shutting wildly. The fire rages. The invisible presence seems to be prowling around the room again, coming close to James, John Jr., the teacher, the slave woman.
Did you hear it?
No.
Who are you?
Someone who was once
a... Go to hell, Kate Betts!
Betsy is dragged by her arms across the floor and up the stairs. John, the teacher, and John Jr. rush to her aid but are knocked back violently by an invisible force and crash into the walls and pieces of furniture. As Betsy is bounced up the wooden steps, James restrains Lucy. Light filters through bare trees. The Bell's house stands alone behind its rough fence. The schoolhouse stands isolated in a fold of the hills. The teacher sits working at his desk.
It spoke. It had a voice. But what did it want? Why was it making Betsy suffer so? What did she do to make it so angry? The Black Wolf? The young girl visible only to Betsy, the spirit which none of us could see. How did they relate to each other? Were they one and the same? The attacks on Betsy got worse. It spoke more and more. I tried to get it to tell us why it had come. My questions were answered with silence. Why wouldn't it answer?
The timber-built church rises against a darkening sky. In the nave of the church, John Bell, on his knees, leans against the small altar table as if in prayer. Finally, he struggles to his feet.
In my life, I've done far more good than not. Even saints commit sins of some sort. How can you allow my family to be punished like this? So is Satan.
He kneels back down again.
I've offered you my life in recompense. Why do you not take it? I beg you. I beg your love. Rid us of this curse.
John Bell coughs up copious amounts of blood onto his hands and his handkerchief. In the candlelit house, John Bell talks to the teacher.
The Lord has forsaken me, Richard.
That which attacks Betsy attacks you as well.
Richard, the teacher, hurriedly consults a sheaf of papers.
Someone who was once happy. To whom do you think that refers?
Kate Betts. Everything points to her.
Well, look, if she is the cause, then why not just return the profit from the timber to her?
I tried. 2 months ago. I sent Chloe to see her. Money in hand. She sent it back.
And she does mean to torment you.
Until I die.
This entity. Do you believe it can read your mind?
No, I don't know. But I do believe it can hear our conversation. That's how it knows our every move.
But it is only present on this property.
John puts a finger to his lips. A carriage races through the night. John Jr. drives with Richard beside him. Betsy sleeps inside the carriage.
You know, the fog is awfully thick for this time of day.
We made good time. We should be out of the woods soon.
The invisible presence seems to be moving through Betsy's bedroom. Finding the bed empty apart from the spooky china doll, the presence seems to run amok as if hunting for the girl, passing through walls, along the landing, up the stairs.
No.
Finding the two boys asleep in the upper bedroom, the presence passes on, down through the house. Past John Bell, standing taking a drink. Out through the window, over the roof of the barn, out across the meadows and over the canopy of the forest. At huge speed now, the presence crests a wooded hill and careers down towards another patch of misty woodland. Penetrating the branches, the presence comes level with the carriage. A huge tree falls directly in the path of the speeding carriage. The front wheels hit the tree trunk, causing the carriage to perform a spectacular somersault, smashing axles and window glass as it thumps back to the ground. A powerful wind picks up. Betsy still lies on the seat of the carriage. Richard struggles to his feet, clutching a wounded shoulder. He battles to stand against the hurricane force wind. Peering into the carriage, Richard discovers Betsy lying on the seat. He takes her up in his arms and staggers away. He steps carefully over the fallen tree trunk. He almost disappears into the maelstrom of dust and blown leaves. He looks around desperately. He lays Betsy down on the ground.
Betsy, can you hear me?
She wakes and puts her arm around his neck. Richard sees John Jr. struggling with one of the horses. John is attacked by the black wolf.
Come on.
Richard hurries Betsy away as John struggles with the wolf. Richard leaps onto the horse's back and helps Betsy up behind him. They race off, pursued by the wolf. The wolf gets a purchase on the horse's hindquarters. Free again, the horse pounds up an avenue of trees.
It's getting closer!
Betsy looks anxiously back at the ravening animal chasing them. The wolf gains on them. And then, as it passes them, it seems to disappear. Betsy looks back again.
It's gone.
Gone where?
They continue cantering through the shadowy avenue of trees. They look to the right and the left. There is no sign of the wolf. Suddenly, the wolf reappears, running straight at them. The horse rears and they all fall in a heap. Betsy wakes up in a comfortable bed.
Mother? I'm right here, darling.
The most terrible nightmare. You were sending me away.
Oh, I would never send you away. Yes, darling.
Am I gonna die?
No. You're not gonna die. Now you just rest, sweet girl. Just rest.
Betsy closes her eyes once more.
If this entity can hear us at all times and is in all places,
There's no escaping it.
John's hand trembles as he speaks. The Bell's house at night.
You care for it, don't you, Richard? More than the normal concern of a teacher for a student.
Why would you say that?
I've seen you look at her.
True, there is no one for a day's ride as comely as your daughter, Lucy. I would not presume to think
maybe
that
you should.
I'm almost 20 years her senior.
The same is true of John.
Can she love me?
She will. It's all right for her, Richard. Please, marry her.
Your faith in me is flattering, Lucy.
Please.
But I could not, with good conscience, marry Betsy merely to be her protector. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Lucy, kneeling imploringly at Richard's feet, smiles ruefully and nods in regretful assent.
After that night, something changed. The attacks on Betsy became less violent. The entity now took out its rage on John, while leaving Betsy in an almost lifeless state.
James and Richard look on helpless as John, on his hands and knees, is yanked about by the demon.
Die, John. Yes.
What's that?
The entity wouldn't let anyone try to help Betsy when she was under its control. I felt powerless. John wouldn't listen. He fought it. And in return, he was made to suffer.
The Bell's house stands in grey morning light. On the porch sits Lucy, wrapped in a shawl and looking mournfully out across the landscape. She turns to see the floorboards straining under an invisible weight. The woven seat of the hanging chair next to her dips. She stares suddenly as she seems to see the entire sequence of the terrible events that have befallen them. Betsy's door swings open. Lucy comes in to find her daughter sprawled, seemingly lifeless, on the bed. Lucy climbs onto the bed and takes Betsy in her arms. As she begins to moan, she awakes in an armchair. Lucy comes slowly back to reality and looks around. Her attention is suddenly drawn by a sound from above. Grabbing a candle, she runs to Betsy's room.
Betsy!
She strokes the brow of the sleeping girl. She goes back out through the door. As she closes it, however, she hears a sound and turns to look back in. She stares. Seeing a dark shape bending over Betsy, she drops her candle, causing an instant conflagration. She suddenly comes back to reality, sitting on the front porch of the house. She looks out over the low hills of the horizon. She closes her eyes tight and sits as if praying. John Bell, walking with difficulty and leaning heavily on a staff, walks past a sign reading Bat's Farm. Slaves work in the clearing in front of the two-story timber farmhouse. John continues limpingly towards the front steps.
Hey, Bats!
The hatchet-faced Catherine Bats emerges from the front door and stares down at John Bell.
Call back your furies. Spare my family. Take it.
He holds out to her a flintlock pistol. She steps down and takes it from him, a glint of triumph in her eye.
Exact your pound of flesh.
She cocks the gun and holds it to his forehead with glee.
I'll beg you. End her, cuss.
She lets the gun fall.
I put no curse on you or your family. Cursed yourself, John.
She thrusts the gun back into his hands and turns grimly to go back indoors. John turns hopelessly and hobbles away. Sunlight shines through trees. In a misty clearing, John Bell removes his coat. Drawing the pistol, he kneels on the ground. He cocks the pistol. He closes his eyes briefly and then holds the barrel of the gun to his temple and pulls the trigger. He slowly opens his eyes and looks at the gun. He cocks it again. John eyes the lowering boughs of the trees around him. He puts the gun to his temple once more, and then breaks down. He collapses onto the grass. Betsy kneels on her bed, brushing her hair. Girl's hand mirror appears a high-speed image of the approach to the house and the route up the stairs to her room. The door creaks open. Betsy lies asleep in her bed, the coverlet around her shins. Something or someone approaches the bed. Betsy lies blissfully clutching her doll. An invisible hand pulls the covers up to her chin. A dark figure moves around to the other side of her bed. It sits down on the edge of the bed. A man's hand stretches out and strokes her hair. The bed covers are yanked violently off her. She looks up. A pillow is ripped, spilling feathers. She runs for the door but is grabbed by the feet and dragged backwards. Again, she is suspended in the air and then dropped. She's thrown onto the bed. She cowers as John Bell leans over her.
Vicious.
Her arms are pinioned and her legs spread. Her eyes roll up in her head. She lies on her back on the bed in an almost catatonic state as the storm rages outside. John Bell kneels by the bed, stuffing pieces of off-white linen into a canvas sack. He gets to his feet. He turns to the window as his face is illuminated by a flash of lightning. He sits by the bed, deep in thought, a crumpled and blood-stained shirt pressed to his face. Betsy lies in the bed, taking short, gasping breaths. John presses his forehead to his hands as if in contrition. He then stashes the shirt into the bag. He picks up Betsy's doll from where it has fallen on the floor, looks at the cracked face, and cradles it into his shoulder. Betsy lies shivering as if in fear or shock. John Bell lifts the coverlet and slips the doll in with her. He moves to get up, pausing slightly to wince as if in regret. At the door, he turns, looks back at Betsy, and leans his forehead against a low rafter. A mist seems to rise from the form of the prostrate girl and coalesces into what seems to be her own ghost standing at the bedside, dressed in a cambric nightgown stained with blood at crotch level. The ghostly figure turns her limpid blue eyes towards John Bell, who slips out through the door. She speaks.
Mama always was a heavy sleeper.
We return back through the looking glass to Betsy brushing her hair on the bed.
I was born from evil and innocence. Part her soul died, and that John took her innocence.
Betsy silently sits on her bed. She picks up her doll, looks at it lovingly, and holds it to her chest.
Make him pay for what he has done to us.
Betsy lays her head on her pillow. Betsy's ghost fades away. The door swings open in the darkness. A pair of plain but quite small leather boots step carefully into the room. A hooded figure appears to be sleeping in a rocking chair by a bed in which lies recumbent the figure of John Bell. Sleeping with his mouth open, his face looks old and ill.
Take it.
Thank you.
A spoonful of dark liquid from a medicine bottle is administered to his lips. John Bell's eyes flicker open. They widen and bulge grotesquely as he seems to choke or gasp for breath. His head rises slightly from the pillow as he stares up into the eyes of his daughter, Betsy. She returns his gaze, an ambivalent expression on her face. Light falls on the face of the hooded figure in the chair, revealing it to be Lucy, who gazes blankly at the scene. Lucy continues to look on, as if thinking painful thoughts.
You seem so sound. You don't even feel me get out of bed.
Is this Betsy's?
Mom is. I'll clean it.
Lucy pushes open Betsy's door and recognizes the dark figure as that of her husband. She drops her candle. Lucy continues her sad vigil by John Bell's bedside. On a patch of snowy ground above the house, Betsy stands by a bare wooden cross marked John Bell. She turns her sad face away and spots the small figure in the mob cap. The small ghost raises her head, her complexion clearing from corpse-like to radiant as she does so. The small figure turns, and as she walks away towards the trees, disappears. Betsy stands by her father's grave. The screen fades to white. Back in the present day now, the vodka-drinking mother looks shocked.
After that night, Betsy never heard from the entity again.
Mom? Mom? Dad's here. I'm leaving.
Okay.
She gets up from the desk on which still sits the cracked china doll. On the wall is an ancient wedding photo of Betsy and Richard. In front of the house, a dark-haired man gets out of a car.
I love you.
I love you too.
The woman picks up a parcel propped against the front porch and goes back inside. She jumps as she is confronted by Betsy's ghost. The ghost disappears. The woman's face changes and she hurries outside again. The daughter waves unhappily as the car pulls away.